Hello, everyone, and welcome to Monogamish Pod, a podcast about non-monogamy and polyamory through a Black Caribbean lens. I'm your host, Jen, and on today's episode, I'll be speaking with Evita La Vida Loca Sawyers about her new book, A Polyamory Devotional, 365 Daily Reflections for the Consensually Non-Monogamous. Now, I've spoken about this book before. I'm very excited for it to be released today, October 20th, 2023, wherever books are sold. And so I decided to have Evita on to talk about her journey with writing this book and her adaptation of today's polyamory reminder into this amazing body of work that's out there in the world. Of course, I read the book before speaking to Evita. I was lucky enough to get an ARC, and there definitely are some wonderful, insightful gems inside. I can't wait for you all to get your own copies and read it as well. You should order it today if you haven't already, by the way. So, without further ado, here is Evita. Hello, everyone. Welcome to Monogamish Pod. Today with me, I have Evita. You'll probably know Evita. She's like super famous on the internet, and I've had her on the podcast a couple of times. But we're here today not just to talk about her journey into polyamory or the Metamor Bill of Rights, like we did last time, but we are here to talk about Evita's new book.
Yay.
Yeah, there was like a lot of tingles when I said that. It was like Evita's new book. It's like amazing, right?
It's still so surreal for me. I remember like when I got the like picture of the cover, and like the thing that stuck out to me was it had an ISBN like on the back, and I was like, I have a book with an ISBN number. Like, that's wild to me. It was so surreal. It's been a very surreal thing to accomplish.
Yeah, I mean, I think the last time that we spoke to you were actively writing the book and you were going to travel somewhere to kind of like lock in and finish it. I of course, we're all friends here. Everybody knows I know Evita in real life. I've hugged her. It's real, like we've touched. And, you know, Shanae wrote the foreword to this book. Y'all know Shanae. She's on the podcast all the time. And the one person who I haven't had on the pod or not familiar with is Tick the Wolf of Kimchi Cuddles fame, who also has a book of their own. So it's kind of like the who's who of important polyamorous people just got together. You wrote this amazing book. Shanae wrote the foreword and Tikva did the illustrations. So how did this all come together?
So I originally started today's polyamory reminder with like a challenge to myself to see if I could do one once a day, because it was the pandemic, everybody's stuck in the house. And I was like, okay, well, if I can do one once a day, can I amass 365 individual ones of these and put them in a book and kind of have like a polyamory devotional? Because, you know, back in my Christian days, I enjoyed devotionals and had a few. And then as I have changed my, you know, spiritual understanding and practice, I still have books that function in that capacity. I know there's another one. There's one by Mark Nepo, I believe, called The Book of Awakening. And I like the idea of having a small bite-sized like chunk of wisdom to chew on. I also like the idea of having a format to where the way I described it when I was talking to my publisher is like choose your own adventure. So you can, you know, read it once a day. You can, you know, pick it up and, you know, open the book and say, universe, speak to me, you know, open to a page. You can choose one and, you know, mull on it for a week. And, you know, and so I kind of like that format as opposed to having a book where it's kind of like a start and a finish and you have to get through it. You know, I kind of find that I feel like this generation then too, just, you know, busy adults in general, we often don't have the time to sit and read a book from start to finish. And so I kind of like this format of going like it, you know, say someone could start it and read it, you know, once every 365 days. I also like something that we can go back to. I enjoy that about books. And so I like that about, you know, the Bible when I read it, or, you know, different books that matter to me is, you know, that going, having something that I can go back to and passages that I read and reread and re-reflect on that are resonant for me. And so I, you know, like I said, I challenged myself to do 365 and then, you know, kind of comprise them all. And actually when I went to like, you know, I'd already had the book deal and, you know, I was like, okay, let me count and see how many I have. I didn't have 365. I think I had about 40 that I had to write and had to like, you know, kind of come up with that I hadn't written. Had to kind of write. And so that was a challenge, trying to come up with, 40 unique ones, because most of the time I tell people, my content is very, not to get too woo-woo, but I feel like it's very like divinely inspired, so something will say something, I'll have a conversation with someone, something will happen in my life. And that's really where it comes from. I really don't sit down and plot out, what am I going to say today? Like, usually it's like I'll get a lightning strike and then I'm like, I'm going to write something about that. And that's kind of how it happens. And so my polyamory reminders were pretty much the same. So having to sit down and like actually think, okay, this is what I actually want to write about, or like create these new ones, that was a little challenging. But once I had finally compiled the 365, and I'd always talked to Tikva about like illustrating. Me and Tikva are very, very good friends. I actually just talked to them today. We've never met in person, which is really funny. Never met in person. We've been friends for years and good friends for years. But we've never met in person. So I hope that changes. I hope we get an opportunity to actually meet each other and meet space. But Tikva is a good friend of mine. And so, I asked them to do the illustrations, and they already had a relationship with Thorn Apple, which is the publisher. And then, Shanae is a good friend of mine. And, Shanae and I often talk about our polyamory experience and the community at large. Shanae, asked if she could write the foreword. And I was like, absolutely. And, Shanae and I have a unique relationship in that, when we met, it appeared as if we were at odds with each other for like our methodology, like how we function. And but over the course of getting to know one another, and also just our own movement through polyamory, and that having experiences that kind of make you go, I used to feel very staunchly about this, and then I had this situation that happened, and now I, have a little bit more nuance, or I see things a little bit differently. It resulted in a sort of kind of coming together and going, no, actually, we're not at odds with each other about how we think polyamory should function, or what we want to see. Our integrity in polyamory is still the same, and so that forged a sisterhood, really. When she wanted to write the foreword, I was like, absolutely. And I love what she said, because I didn't even know that I held that or she held that regard for me, or like, she had seen my, she's talking about she had seen my documentary and seen me doing videos, and that was really validating for her. And I kind of really didn't know that when she wrote it, and then I read it and was like, oh wow, I love that. So that's kind of how it came together.
Isn't it so interesting that even though you've been friends with someone for years and you've been having discourse and having these conversations about polyamory, big conversations, that sometimes you don't always know exactly how they were introduced to you and how much you've touched them with your presence. So when I read the foreword, because of course, y'all, I read the book. When I read the foreword, I was like, oh, wow, this is making me cry. This is like super emotional for me. And I'm not even the person you're writing about. And so it is a very beautiful foreword. When y'all have the book in your hands, you will definitely know what I'm talking about when you read it. But I think it's great that you all were able to come together, create this fantastic, fantastic body of work. And of course, the bulk of it is from your, today's polyamory reminder. And that is one of the things that, I was introduced to you through. Of course, met you through Black Poly Pride. But of course, then following on social media, I saw these things and I was like, wow, some things I never thought about. Some things seemed super obvious to me, but not to other people. And then others, it was like, wow, let me reframe my thinking on this particular topic. Because like you said, when you grow and you change in your practice, you realize that things are just not as simple or not as direct or just not
what not you thought. As cut and dry, not as cut and dry. And I understand like the desire to have things be simple, because, we don't have a lot of time. We don't have a lot of energy. We want things to be simple. But these things are very nuanced and very complex. We can often say that we hold a particular viewpoint and be really, 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 really strong about that viewpoint. And then some experience just cuts across that. And now you're having to reevaluate, like, this does not fit neatly into my perspective. And like, where do I find myself? Where am I at now? Because now I have this situation that's sort of upended how I feel about that. And that's the stuff that I really enjoy, is kind of being able to sort of unearth those things where it's like, oh no, this is not black and white. This is actually really, I love nuance. I mean, it's, it's uncomfortable at times, but I love nuance.
Yes, absolutely. So let's talk a little bit about the 40 that you didn't have. So, you know, again, we're hip with it. If you follow Evita, then you've seen the 300 plus that she had written before. But the 40 that you didn't have, what was the process of writing those? Like you said it was difficult. You said you really had to like lock down and get that done. How did you do that? How were you able to let lightning strike you 40 times in a short period of time?
Wow. Yeah. So I was fortunately blessed to be in Ecuador for 2 months, which, like I said, was kind of like a writer's retreat. And even in my like introduction, I mentioned my wonderful friends who run a medicine retreat space over there. And I had gone over there to their home to house it because they were in the States. They were visiting. And it's in a little city called Macas. And it's about 6 hours from Quito, which is the capital of Ecuador and where the airport is. It's very small town. I knew nobody there. Everybody speaks Spanish. And while I do speak a good deal of Spanish, it's not really enough to like make a ton of friends, you know? And so there's no nightlife really. There's no club. There's no bar. I don't even think there's a movie theater there. And so I was largely just stuck in the house for most of the time by myself. Which was great because I got an opportunity to like really, you know, hone in and focus on writing the book, and compiling everything. Cause it was not just writing. It was also revising the ones that I had already written. There was some that I was like, you know, I don't want to include this. So even though I had already written them, I was like, you know, some that I felt were too similar, you know, so there was a lot of like rewriting. And then I also had, I had word counts. So I had word counts for the reminder. It only could be a certain amount of words. And then I had word counts for the little blurb that went underneath this. So a lot of them had to be like rewritten and gone over and, you know, fixed and restructured. And so it was like a whole, even the ones that I'd written before, they're not still not quite the same because those had to be adjusted and you know, and shifted. And so the 40 that I had written, some of them came from, like, sometimes I'll get little epiphanies and I will, like, you know, scribble down notes and go, okay, make a, you know, post about this or whatever. And so some of them had came from that. Some of them came from me reading some of the reminders and then picking out maybe portions of it that I wanted to expound on a little bit more. I think people that don't content create, they don't understand how challenging it is to try to get this, like, really nuanced and complex topic in a small frame, you know. Like, I think people really don't appreciate, you know, the challenge that poses. And, you know, when I see people, well, you didn't talk about this or you didn't say that, and I'm like, you know, I only have like a few characters here, right? So I have to do the best that I can to be as succinct as possible while also still, you know, still being nuanced, still being true to my message, etc. So sometimes there were reminders that like touched on the surface of a topic, but there were like areas that I could have gone a little bit more deeper. And so those ones I would kind of pull out maybe a piece of that and develop, you know, something where I wanted to say more about that, but just didn't have the room in that particular reminder. And so I just kind of gave the broad strokes. So some of them came from that. I mean, I still was there for 2 months, so I was still having things happen. And then I'd also like gone through like a breakup, like right around that time too. So my heart was just open in general. And so all of these things were just coming to me as I was like grieving the loss of the relationship and, you know, mourning and all of that stuff. So, you know, life was still happening and I was still, you know, getting messages about, you know, what I wanted to say. And so that was, you know, a good, but there were moments where I was like, I have no clue, like how I'm going to really come up with these in this way. Cause you know, my content creation from the past is just, you know, like I said, when lightning struck, I was like, oh, I should write about that. And that's cool. But actually sitting down and going, no, I have to think and create and make 40 of these. That was a challenge. It was, but I made it work. And actually some I haven't released them all. So, you know, people going into the book thinking that, oh, well, I've seen all these things that are in the book. Actually, no, there are some in there that have not been released. I released a couple of them or a few of them over time, but I haven't released all of the ones that were in the book. And then I have some newer ones, you know, from that I just, you know, were written and created after the book was already released. So they're not the content, you know, that's, you know, that it's not like a reread to where you're going to go back and go, okay, well, I already saw this one. I already saw that one. Like you might've seen it, but like I said, some of it has changed. And then some of them are in there that have never been released at all, so they've never seen, you know, the light of day outside of the book.
So is this a hint that there's a polyamory devotional too in the work? It feels like you're trying to say there's a second book. It feels like you're going to try. It feels like you're saying it's like daily bread. There's always another one.
You know, if I can come up with another distinct 365 at some point, that's a possibility, you know, or 365 more, you know, for the consensually non-monogamous. I have thought about writing a book. I think, or another book, I think that I did a series of content once that was really, really resonant about my movement through my anxious attachment style. And like, it was very, 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 very resonant for people. Cause I feel like a lot of the stuff that we hear or read about attachment theory comes from therapists, doctors, et cetera, that are talking about that. But it often doesn't come from a person that goes, this is what it's like living with it, you know? And this is my experience, you know, and this is how I've had to, you know, adjust and adapt so that I'm not, you know, the way I see attachment theory is just unbalanced. So I'm not unbalanced, you know, that it's not having these like, you know, maladaptive, you know, effects on my life, you know. And so I, you know, was thinking about kind of if I wrote a second book, or if I write a second book or another book, I think my next book will be something around like, you know, polyamory for the anxiously attached.
I mean, I would read it because I need it too. You know, because no one is ever one thing all the time, right? So in some relationships you just happen to be anxious, and some you may be more secure. It is what it is. You know me, I'm a fan, I'm a buy it. You write a book, I'm a buy it.
Right.
So I think it's a topic that'd be very interesting and very resonant. So, and you cover a variety of topics in your book. I mean, of course, you talk some about anxiousness, you talk about, you know, shifting mindsets and shifting perspectives when it comes to like conflict in relationships, the individual journey of polyamory, and something that we don't hear a lot about, which is SDIs. So I know that a lot of people have thoughts about, you know, polyamorous people, all y'all just out there having sex and fucking and whoring and diseases, and that's why you get tested so often. And so I appreciate the insight that you put into talking about STIs and such in the thing. Why was that so important for you to include?
I have HSV too. And I'm very vocal about that. I talk about it all the time. I've talked about it publicly, repeatedly. It's one of my, it's part of like, you know, the fight to like reduce the stigma. And it's interesting because, you know, at the time that wasn't the case when I was writing the book, but now I actually work with, people living with HIV and AIDS. So now it's become even more important to me, to talk about that because, you know, I learned so much in just getting this job, you know, as it relates to STIs. And so, you know, at first it was just personal, you know, it was, you know, you kind of being like, okay, like, how do I show up in such a way that I am destigmatizing myself? Because initially when I first got the diagnosis, I was like, okay, my sex life is over. You know, you deal with all of that stuff. I'm dirty. I'm this, I'm that, or whatever. And then once I started like reading about it and learning about it and educating myself, I was like, now, you know, the feeling was like, I'm not going to take on this, you know, belief about myself, or, you know, I'm going to fight back on this, you know, this is not, you know, what they make it out to be. I'm not dirty. I wasn't reckless. You know, these things happen when we're humans and we're having sex, you know, that these are things that occur. There's actually a very, very, very good book by Dr. Evelyn Decker, if I'm not mistaken, or Dacker. Evelyn Molina Dacker, if I'm not mistaken, her name is. It's called Destigmatized STIs. It's about 82 pages. It's so, so, so thorough and just a lot of really good information about there, about just the normalization that these are things that happen, you know, when humans have sex, it's not the end of the world. And really what causes the problems is stigma, is lack of access to healthcare, it's misinformation. You know, that's really what causes people being unwilling to talk about it because of all the shame and unwilling to have these conversations. And so, and especially in the non-monogamous community, what community of, you know, of any really, really, really needs to be like breaking down stigma and having this conversation so that we can be safe. Because, you know, in a monogamous relationship, ostensibly or in theory, you know, if two people are coming together and they're only having sex with each other and that's it, you know, then the sex that they're having with each other isn't really impacting anybody else. But, you know, in non-monogamy, the sex that I have with my partner is not just sex that I have with my partner. It's the sex that I'm having with their partners. It's the sex that they're having with my partners and the people that I'm interacting with. And so it's much more important for us that we get information and education and not misinformation and, you know, myth and like all of these things, probably more so than any other community. And the how we do that is by people being willing to kind of stand up and say, hey, you know, these are conversations that we need to be having, and not from the standpoint of like, hey, I'm just like kind of abstractly talking about this, but like, no, this is my lived experience, you know. And so I appreciate when people are honest about, you know, having a diagnosis. And I get that everybody doesn't feel safe enough to do that. I definitely understand that there's some risk in that. I'm pretty sure that there are people that are like, okay, stay away from that person, or tell their partner, stay away from that person. And I mean, you know, people get to hold that. You know, we all have our own level of risk tolerance. And I'm not really in the business of shaming people for that. I do appreciate when people are able to kind of talk about that and sort of normalize that average everyday humans, you know, have chronic STIs. It's not the end of the world. You know, you can live healthy, thriving, you know, active, full sex lives with a chronic STI, provided, you know, you take care of yourself and get treated and, you know, get on medications. And then also, too, the conversation around like expanding our ideas of sex, you know. Because just because you have an STI doesn't mean that your sex life is over. There are all kinds of ways to have sex, like having conversations about what acts that we can, you know, involve ourselves in so that we can reduce risk. You know, having a much more, here's that word again, nuanced idea about this, instead of just going, oh, okay, well, someone has the STI, you know, just put a stamp on them, stay away. And so that was, you know, like I said, it was personal for me.
Is there another topic that you covered in this book that was really like very, I mean, of course, all topics are personal in their own way, right? But is there a topic that was really resonant for you as you were writing the devotionals for that particular topic? Is there another one that really jumped out at you where you were like, I have to speak about this. This has to be said.
I'm going to say probably what's coming forward for me is the topics of jealousy and compersion, and both of those synonymously, because when I got into polyamory, I had a lot of jealousy. It was a big struggle. And I remember one time specifically, I'll never forget this. Okay. I made a post in a polyamory group that I was in. We were newly polyamorous, and my husband and I were in a triad. And the way the triad functioned at the time, we had one bedroom, you know, that the adults slept in. My kids slept in another room. And the bed wasn't big enough for all three of us to sleep in it. So when she would come over and stay the night, we would rotate out who slept on the couch. And to be fair, you know, everybody rotated out. So it wasn't like I, you know, made, you know, my husband sleep on the couch all the time, or made her sleep on the couch all the time. We had a little, you know, we had a little schedule.
Yeah. I mean, you got to do what you got to do, right?
Right, right. So we had a rotation. And so, and we never had a rule that, like, you know, if somebody wasn't in the room, that the two people that was in the room couldn't be sexual with each other. You know, that wasn't a rule that we had. I've definitely heard of that. That wasn't a rule that we had. And so it was a struggle for me because, you know, sometimes I'd be out on the couch and they'd be in there getting it in and I could hear it. And I'm newly polyamorous and that shit was, you know, fucking me up. I made a post in a polyamory group asking if it was okay for me to ask my partners to keep it down when they were being sexual with one another so that I couldn't hear, you know, when I was out on the couch. And they jumped on me so bad I cried. I remember like bawling, crying. You're, you know, controlling, and who are you to limit their expression? And I was just a baby polyamorous who was struggling, okay? Like, I was just like, I don't know what to do about this. I literally can't sleep, you know, I'm sitting here like, you know, feeling all this. And I don't think people really understand how visceral that emotion is, that experience of jealousy and that threatening fear of like the loss of the relationship. Such a visceral emotion for me. It felt like I got punched in the gut, you know, it was disorienting. And so I'm just trying to get some help. I'm, you know, and just I don't remember anyone being gentle. You know, I don't remember anyone being kind. And so so initially it was a struggle, you know, for me, because I'm like, I'm going through all these challenging emotions. I'm not getting any empathy. I'm not getting any, tenderness, you know, about this. And I'm struggling. And over time, I developed like a tougher skin and was like, nah, fuck that. Like, I was like, this is my emotional reaction, goddammit. And I'm going to stand up for this, and I'm not controlling, and I'm not whatever, blah, blah, blah. And I'm not childish. You know what I mean? I'm a human being having a human experience, going through something difficult, going through something challenging. Breaking down monogamy is hard. And like, you know, and so I kind of started to be that person. And so the subject of jealousy is very important to me, because like I said, people get so much flack for even just admitting that that's what they're experiencing and talking about it. And, you know, to me, I have now like learned to, and even now as I'm talking about it, I'm getting emotional. Like, you know, jealousy has, it doesn't feel good. It's not comfortable. Jealousy is one of those emotions that when it comes knocking at your door, you'd be like, oh shit, you know, it's back. But I always know that I'm gonna get something from it. I always know that if I just tell it, okay, come on inside, sit down, have a cup of coffee. I always know that I'm going to get something from it. And so jealousy has become, you ever have one of those friendships where it's like, I don't know that I super like this person, but like, also I'm like really, really glad that they're in my life, or like, it's like, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like, you know, it's like I have this like challenging friendship with this person, but also this friendship matters to me and it's important and it's useful. That's the way I feel about jealousy. Jealousy is a friend, you know, to me. It's become a friend. It's a strange friend, you know, but jealousy has become a friend to me. And so that one was one that I really wanted to talk about a lot and was important to me to have, and very personal for me to make sure that I was, you know, talking about that experience and like giving people the okay to like have that normal human emotion of jealousy. While also bringing critical examination to the things that you allow it to propel you to do, you know? The experience of the jealousy itself is not the problem. It's what we do in the experience that we need to bring critical analysis to. And then also the subject of compersion, because, you know, on the flip side, there's this elevation of the experience of compersion and being able to feel it as like, this is somehow some like top tier, you know, like you've unlocked some polyamory boss level because you can experience it. And also what I noticed too is people feeling, you know, superior, you know, because they can experience conversion. Sure. Yeah. And I didn't like that either. So I was like, so that was another one that I wanted to talk about, even as a person who has gotten to the point to where I do experience compersion, and, you know, compersion was something that I was able to cultivate. But that was more about like my own desire to want to move to a different space about this, or playing with my perceptions and going, can we arrive at something different? Is that possible? You know, as opposed to it being like a moral imperative, you know, for me to get to that space. It isn't. It was something that I was like, is this possible? It was experimental. Like, I was like, can I get there? You know, if I were to try to move towards this, what would that look like for me? Or how would that be accomplished? You know, but it was not a moral imperative. And I really, really appreciate, you know, kind of being a voice that says there is no moral imperative to get to a space of feeling compersion or experiencing compersion. As long as you can say that overall, you show up to your partner's interaction with others in a healthy, mature, you know, way that, you know, isn't trying to infringe on their autonomy, or is allowing, you know, for them to be a separate human being and make their own choices and whatever. Then if you never experience compersion, or if you always are in a space where you're like, you know, I'm kind of grumbly about this, but like, you know, I'm going to show up in integrity to, you know, living this way and giving my partner the space to be a free individual. I don't care if you ever experienced compersion, you know, so.
I mean, listen, I'm still salty. My dad took my younger brother and sister to Disney World and not me, okay? I'm still salty. It has been over 20 years. I am still salty. So
and
what?
You get to hold that, right? You get to name that and you get to hold that, okay? So, yeah.
I think, of course, I mean, you talk about this in the book, but yeah, like I said, I think that this elevation of compersion as this like superior level of polyamory, like if you're not doing compersion, what are you even doing? You're not doing this right. And I think that being able to just help people realize, hey, it's okay. You don't have to be there. You don't ever have to get there. And it doesn't mean you'll feel that way for every single relationship you're in.
Every single relationship, every single situation. Like, you know, I have situations where I feel very compulsive, and then I have situations where I do not. And that fluctuates depending on what's going on in my relationship with the person, what's going on in my personal life. Like, I noticed some months ago that with my current partner, I'm in a long distance relationship with him. And I noticed that I was feeling a little bit more jealous. And I almost never feel jealousy in that relationship. That relationship is super secure. I'm very happy in it. And that's generally how I function in that relationship. And so the more secure I feel in the relationship, the much more compersion, you know, is able to be experienced for me, because I feel very secure. I'm not feeling threatened. And thus that fear isn't popping up, which is causing me to feel jealousy, envy, whatever, you know. But I was noticing that I was feeling a lot more jealousy and envy in my connection with him, which was strange because our relationship itself hadn't really changed. It was still functioning the way it had always been functioning. He was still showing up very well. And so I was like, what the hell is this? You know, where is this coming from? And it was because I wasn't resourced in my own romantic and sexual life apart from him. Because like I said, he's in long distance relationships, so we don't see each other that often. And in my local life, it was crickets, you know? So showing up to, you know, being really supportive and jazzed about him having all these other connections with other people, and where, you know, I'm feeling lonely and, you know, undesirable, and, you know, things are falling flat, you know, for me romantically and stuff, it was challenging. And so, but like, I also, you know, still felt a measure of, you know, enjoyment, that not necessarily that he was, you know, going out and doing things with specific people, but more that, you know, he was living a life that he wants to live. And that's really where I feel that the happiness more often than not is, you know, my relationship with this person exists in such a way that they feel safe and free to, you know, to pursue their genuine desires. And that's actually where I feel the compersion. It's not necessarily that, you know, this person is, you know, and sometimes it's, you know, that they're in bed, you know, getting their, you know, fucking, you know, rocks off with somebody else. But like, I'm not one of those kinds of people that shit turns me on. I'm really not. Like, I'm like, okay, cool. Like, you know, good for you. Like, you
know, like, good for you.
Good for you. Okay. Like, cause I'd like to be fucking right now, you know? So I'm like, good for you. Good for you. Okay. That's great. But what I actually feel happiness around is, oh, you know, I show up in such a way and my love exists for this person in such a way that they feel safe and secure and supported and encouraged to be their genuine selves, to pursue their genuine desires, and to know that, like, I'm not going anywhere because of that. Like, that's actually where the joy comes for me, is from that.
Yeah, I mean, when you and your partner can be your authentic selves, and you should be with each other, and that is when, like you said, yeah, the true joy and the enlightenment that people talk about comes in, right? So you've written this amazing book. We've talked about some great concepts from the book. Let's talk about where people can see you in the wild talking about this book. Are there any book talks coming up? Are there any, like, things that you're going to be doing? I just want to know for me. And for the listeners, but also for me.
So I'm a very reluctant, I'm just like, baby, you gotta get better at this, man. So I do want to plan some book events. And I believe that I am going to try to at least have like a book release party in November, but you know, I'm still fleshing that out. And I would like to actually travel and do some book signings. But there's nothing on the horizon right now. I can honestly say that. But it is in the works. And so, you know, if you go to my Instagram, LaVidaLoca34, you know, as I'm developing those things, it'll be coming out. You know, I'll definitely be posting and talking about that. There's nothing planned right now, but there is some stuff, you know, that I'm working with Shanae on, you know, trying to put in the works. Like I said, I tell people, it's so funny because Shanae is the same way and she says the same thing, but I feel like I'm a very reluctant content creator. I really am. We both are very reluctant content creators. I'm a very reluctant content creator. And, I also struggle with like fanfare about myself, you know? So that's something that is a challenge for me. And so I feel like that's an area, a growth edge as it relates to the release of this book and kind of going, yeah, Vita, sometimes you got to talk your shit, you know, and make a little bit of noise for yourself. So, you know, stay tuned on the development of that.
I'm just saying, speaking of making a little noise, I saw a little note that you'd put on the internet about a second printing of this book before the thing even dropped out. That sounds like something to have a little fanfare about, like a little, you know, applause for the dress kind of moment. Like, what's happening here?
Yeah, I did a video interview with my publisher, and they let me know that they've already ordered a second printing of the book because they kind of looked at each other and was like, this thing is probably going to be sold out, you know, or we've sold out of the copies that we've printed, or, you know, by the time the release date comes, we're actually going to be sold out. So they've ordered a second printing. It also got featured in some book trade publication as like, you know, five, you know, books for like a, you know, gifts for the holidays or something like that. I got a message from my publisher about that. And so I was like, really? Like I said, it's all so wild. I just did a spirituality and polyamory event with Shanae and Reverend Letitia James, and we were like, you know, going over the outline of the service, and I read an excerpt from my book at the end, and it was like, you know, kind of the benediction, and I was reading it to them, and I was like, I wrote this?
Not I wrote this. Yes, you did.
I did. I know that I did, but I haven't really gone back to it. After I published it, I was like, it felt like such a, like a, and a friend of mine is in publishing, and they told me that, you know, the book process is a long one, you know, it takes, you know, 6 to 9 months. But, you know, from the time I actually like spoke to Thorntree until the time the book was actually, you know, released, it was at least a year or two. So it's a long process, like, you know. And so once I finally like got it comprised and it was done, I haven't really gone back to it. You know, I haven't really like looked through it. And so going back and reading that and going like, oh, wow, you know, so I have these moments. So I'm like, oh, wow, I did this. You know, I wrote this. And so, yeah, so when I hear those things and when it comes back to me that, you know, something like that happens, like I said, I always feel deeply humbled and just like, oh, wow, really? Like, even as, you know, I do think it's a, you know, it's a good resource and stuff, and I stand by it and I support it. And also sometimes it feels like, oh, wow, me, you know, like I said, it's just a very surreal, it's a very surreal thing to have done.
Yeah. I mean, it's been amazing, like watching this evolution from reluctant content creator to, you know, fantastic author to probably gonna, you know, do more books. This means, of course, I mean, you're also like a coach, you know, a relationship coach, you know, coach people on, you know, polyamory, et cetera. You're doing all this work with people, you know, and HIV and AIDS currently, like you're in relationships. You got a lot of stuff going on.
But. Yeah, I get it from my mama. I get it from my mama. My mom has always been, my mom's queer. She's been in social work all my life. She's helped people, you know, since as far back as I can remember. She's the executive director of the Newark LGBTQ Center. She works at, I think it's called Partners in Health, which is does like global health initiatives and, you know, telehealth. And they work with like health equity. And so, yeah, my mom has always been the kind of person that she was just, you know, kind of always around, you know, helping people out. And, you know, so I feel like I get it from my mom. And, as a, you know, person who, human connection is really, really important to me. And I mean, it's important to all of us, you know, but I think there are some of us that are just more wired, you know, for human connection than others. You know, there are some people that, you know, they're a little less wired for it, or, you know, it has a little less, you know, of I don't want to say a value for them, because I think we all have value for human connection, but like the extent to which we want to engage with it, you know, varies from mm-hmm. person to person. And, but for me, like, you know, I'm like, you know, the connection, friends, partners, like, you know, I'm like that. And so, you know, helping others, you know, move through the ways in which we need to heal around human connecting, the ways in which we need to update our beliefs and our thought process on how we connect, the ways in which we need to develop our communication so that we're finding the people that we authentically align with are just things that really, really excite me. You know, they're conversations I love having. They're what I talk about with my friends and what I talk about with my partners. And so how do we help people to have safer sex? How do we, you know, help people to have more liberated sex lives and more liberated relationship structures And all of these things are deeply, deeply important. How do we get back to community? How do we decolonize, you know, these ideas that we've been taught, and, you know, because of, you know, colonization and white supremacy and patriarchy and heteronormativity and cisnormativity, all these things, ableism, you know, classism, all of these things that influence, you know, how obstructed we can be onto that pathway, or obstructed mm-hmm. we can be in that pathway to human connection. And so, you know, these things are very personal for me in my own personal life. And also, you know, on a macro level, you know, having these conversations, talking to people about it, you know, putting these ideas out there. So yeah, so it's very exciting.
Okay, I swear, this is the last question. Like, what is one thing that you want people to take away from a polyamory devotional?
Ooh, I love that question. Is that I don't want you to find me in those pages. I want you to find you in those pages. So I didn't write this book because I'm trying to create an army of people who think and feel like I do. Not at all. I wrote this book because I wanted you to get in, wanted the reader to find their genuine answer for themselves. And that's, I tell my coaching clients that all the time. I tell my coaching clients that coaching is like guidance. I am not telling you what to do. I am here to guide you to your own answers. And in the book, I feel the same way. I'm not trying to create this, you know, like, you know, this group of humans that think and feel like I do about polyamory. Not at all. I am trying to make people look at themselves and go, where do I stand on this? What is my answer? What is my thought process about this? Because the more you are in tune with that for yourself, the greater the outcome of your experience, I feel like, in non-monogamy, because you arrive at self-assuredness, you arrive at self-trust, you know, because you're like, I've examined myself. I'm more sure of what my yeses are, what my noes are, and that's really, really important to enter into and to be in relationships that are secure and consensual, is when we have a deep, deep understanding of where we stand on what we want, what we don't want, you know, how we want to be, how we don't want to be, how we want our partners to show up to us. And so I don't want you to look at that book and go, you know, I'm trying to figure out how to get like Evita or think like Evita. It's like, I want you to find yourself. Find yourself in the pages. Don't find me. Don't look for me. You know, find you.
Fantastic. Fantastic. So how do your kids feel about their mom being a badass author? That's what I want to know next. Like,
they get excited. So they're like, oh, wow, mom. You know, so I could talk to them a ton about it. I'll probably be talking to them more about it as the book releases. But they are excited. You know, I think that, I think to them, it's all just mom, you know? So, I don't know that. And then too, I don't know that anything like really like, you know, I think if maybe I went on like an interview on something or whatever, then they would be like, oh, wow. You know, but my kids are just like, oh, that's cool, mom. But they're proud of me. They are proud of me. I will say that they are proud. They think it's really cool. They know how much I love books. And so, like I said, it's so surreal that, you know, now I have a book, you know, as a lover of books, and they know how much mom loves books. So they're proud of their mother. They are.
But to me, to them, ISBN. I'm just mom. Yeah.
Right. I have my own ISBN. But to them, I'm just mom, you know, so mostly I'm just mom.
Have they held a copy of the book in their hands?
No. So I've got a few copies from the publisher. I don't have one. I haven't given one to them yet, but they have seen. Well, actually, no. I think that when they came out here to visit, actually, I think they did see it. They did see a copy of it, but they don't have their own. And I sometimes want to send one to my former spouse, their dad. Sometimes I'm not sure. I'm going to have to talk to them about that and like, see. I'm going to have to ask them and go, I'd like to send you a copy of the book. And also, I totally get it if you're like, you know, I'm good.
Yeah, I mean, when you pull from life experience to write the amazing things that you do, it can be a bit tricky.
Right. It is some of his story. You know, some of his story is definitely in the pages. And I actually did shout him out in the thank you, you know, and say, you know, that I have to, you know, say that, you know, most of my non-monogamy development came, you know, in this relationship and in this connection with this person. And I can't divorce, even though we got divorced, I can't divorce him from like where I'm at in my polyamory development, like not at all. And so sometimes there's a part of me that's like, yeah, you know, I haven't even really thought about that until this podcast. I'm gonna have to reach out to him and go, you know, my book is coming out on October 20th. you know, I, you know, do you want a copy, or is this something that you're like, yeah, no, I'm good. Like, you know, which was totally fine. Like, you get to name that, you get to state that. I would fully support that, and I would understand if that is your stance. I would get it. And while I don't disparage him in the book in any, you know, shape, any way, shape, form, or fashion, but, you know, like I said, it's his history is in there too.
Yeah, you've never really been one in this particular like frame, like to disparage your, because I mean, y'all were married, y'all went together, y'all made these kids together. This is somebody who's in your life forever, even if you're not still married to them.
Yeah, and he wasn't a bad husband at all. You'll never hear me say that. You'll never hear me say he was a bad husband. You know, we had a good run. That's one of the things that I remember saying. Yeah. I was like, you know what? We had a good run. Yeah.
You had a good run, and you know, at least your book is not like Will and Jada. I know I promised myself I wouldn't talk about this, but of course, thank you so much for being here to talk about the book. The book drops today. Well, we recorded this before, but the book drops today. The episode drops October 20th. It's called A Polyamory Devotional, 365 Daily Reflections for the Consensually Non-Monogamous. It just rolls right off the tongue.
I also wanted to add that if anybody is planning on purchasing the book from Amazon, I'd like to ask that everybody purchase the book on October 20th. I had a friend who published a book, and they said, get your friends and your followers to all purchase on October 20th because it increases the visibility on Amazon. So if you haven't bought it yet and you plan on buying it, October 20th would be the date. I would really love for that. If you want to help me out in that way, that would be great, but you know, also no obligations.
I would hold you personally responsible for Amazon not highlighting it if you don't purchase on the 20th. Thank you. So if Vita says no obligation, I say plague on both your houses. So do with that what you will. Of course. Thanks for joining me, Evita. It was lovely to talk to you about the book. Do you want to remind people where they can find you on the interwebs?
Yes. So I am on Facebook at Levita Loca Sawyers. I'm on Instagram at Levita Loca 34. And so that's pretty much where you can find me at. That's where I am. I have a Twitter, but I hardly ever use it. So, and I have a TikTok, hardly ever use that either. So I can't get the newfangled technology. I really
not
can't.
Newfangled. Okay, Grandma. Like, I don't know where this is coming from. We are not that far apart in age.
I'm telling you, when it comes to technology and learning things, I feel all thumbs. I have people send me screen recordings of how to do stuff all the time because I'm just like, I cannot figure this out. And so I like things to be pretty simple. And so I've figured out, you know, Instagram and Facebook enough to be able to function with it. And so there it is. So Levita Loca 34 on Instagram, Levita Loca Sawyers on Facebook. And that's where you can find me if you want to go deeper.
Perfect. Thank you so much. It was great to see your face again. And of course, you know, we'll have you back and I will see you out in the real world when your book tour finally happens.
Yes, totally, totally. I'll have a great big hug for you.
Yay. Okay. Once again, I would love to thank Evita for being on the podcast today to talk about her new book. Like I said, it's called A Polyamory Devotional. It's available wherever your books, Amazon, Wherever the books are sold, that's where they'll be. So you should definitely go out and get your copy today. One more thing I wanted to bring up, tangentially related to Evita's appearance on the podcast, is that the foreword of her book was written by Sinead Jackson Kendall, who you know is a friend of the pod, and she's bringing Intentional Polyamory, the immersive cohort, back into the world. Now, I spoke about Intentional Polyamory last year on the pod before I took my almost year-long hiatus, but no one is counting. Exactly. So yes, Intentional Polyamory is back. Slots are limited and registration is currently open. You can find out more information on the Intentional Polyamory cohort at bit.ly/polyamonpurpose. Links to that, of course, will be in detailed show notes, including a special code, monogamishpod25, to get $25 off your cohort registration. Just saying, that's out there. I'll include the links to the books that Evita talked about and things like that in the detailed show notes and where to find her at monogamishpod.com. And of course, now I dive into the whole spiel about where you can find Monogamish Pod online. You can find me on Twitter, Instagram, YouTube, Facebook, TikTok at Monogamish Pod. It's the same handle everywhere. Again, monogamishpod.com is where you'll find detailed show notes about the episodes, links, things like that. You can also listen to the podcast wherever you get your podcast, but Spotify is my favorite because I'm hosted by Spotify for Podcasters. So there'll be special things on Spotify that aren't available elsewhere, such as, you know, little polls and questions and stuff.
I would love it if you would rate and review the podcast on your favorite app. Again, like I said, Spotify is a fave, but Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Podchaser, they're all out there. Tell a friend and share the episodes of Monogamish Pod. I'm still getting into the groove of this new system that I've set up. I know, but every like and every listen counts toward making us more discoverable and puts your friend on some cool stuff too. So check out that. You can subscribe to the Monogamish Pod newsletter at monogamishpod.substack.com. It's a free or paid subscriber. Paid subscribers do get special bonus stuff that is usually only available to patrons. Speaking of which, I do have a Patreon, patreon.com/monogamishpod. It is an 18+ platform. You get bonus episodes, photos, bloopers, blog posts. There's a special merch shop just for patrons, not available anywhere else. That happens right there. You get special discounts all the time. You get access to the close friends list on Instagram. And again, like I said, you get access to certain paid aspects of the newsletter. I post them specifically for Patreon on Patreon. You can also support the pod by buying stuff from our merch shop. You know, monogamishpod.threadless.com. You can get a mug, tote bag, shirt. I got a lot of stuff in there, so you can definitely do that. You can also support the podcast by Spotify subscription. You can get access to most of the older episodes that are behind the paywall, including video, for only $4.99 a month. So I think that's a deal. And also, if you just want to send me money to, you know, show your appreciation, like a little tip, you can send it on Cash App, Venmo, my coffee page. You can find me on Twitter, Instagram, Have You Met Jen, for all of those things. That makes it, you know, easy for you. And yeah, I think that's where you can find Monogamish Pod in the Wild. It's where you can find me. And I think that's all I have to talk to you about today, actually. If I forget anything, it'll just be the show notes. Don't worry about that. So once again, I am Jen. This has been Monogamish Pod, and bye, Venus Book. Thank you so much, y'all. Bye, everyone.